Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to Irene Efren Podcast with me, Irene Efren. I interview women around Southeast Asia to bring their unique stories and experiences to empower other women in this region.
Hi, Juanita. Thanks for joining me bright and early this Saturday morning for a podcast recording.
Hi, Irene. It's my very pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I mean, after our late night budget meeting for the upcoming production.
Yeah, that's usually what happens when you do a production of theater.
Life during a production, eh?
Yeah.
The upcoming production that we're working on for all of the listeners of my podcast is The Last 5 Years. And it is going to be streamed in June 2021. So everyone all over the world, you can tune in, you can buy tickets, you can support, and you can watch.
Yes, please do support women and youth in art and theater, definitely.
We will be talking a little bit more about that particular production later on in this podcast. But before we go there, I'd like to ask our guest, Juanita, to introduce herself and her career in the theater scene in Indonesia.
Okay. Hi, my name is Juanita Amran, and I'm usually fondly being called Ipong. That's my nickname. I directed and co-produced several theater productions under Jakarta Performing Arts Community banner, done West Side Story, and then Blackbird and Company, the musical comedy. And right now I'm doing it. I'm doing with Irene, basically. I'm doing The Last 5 Years. That's it.
Yeah, but just to make it clear, my role in The Last 5 Years is a co-producer. And Juanita is directing and also co-producing.
Yes, that's true.
So how did you even get into theater?
My theater history, it goes way back to junior high school, I guess. Because like, I'm always interested in theater since I was a kid. Like in basic school, I even put a production where I wrote, directed, and acted in it with my friends.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know what it was at first. It was just like a simple form of, you know, sandiwara, you know, like a play. Mm-hmm. And it was just fun doing it with my friends. And I was daydreaming a lot as a kid, I guess. So when I get to junior high school, I joined a drama club. But my parents were not feeling it. They were like, no, you know what? That's too weird. theater in Indonesia was just, at that time, was considered a very exclusive, archaic, and a little weird. So my mm-hmm. parents were not, you know, we're not feeling it. And because I grew up sort of in a restricted upbringing. So mm-hmm. I had to, you know, listen to my parents, and then I had to cut that dream out. But the inclination towards it never really died off. I mean, I kept mm-hmm. having the stories in my head and like, you know, menghayal, and then like daydreaming, like I told you, mm-hmm. I'm always daydreaming yeah. a lot. I guess, you know, the universe listened to that head of mine. And towards 2010, I guess, I found this community theater in Jakarta and I joined. And I never stopped ever since.
Wow. In 2010, the community theater that you found in Jakarta, it's JPAC, right?
No. At first, it's Jakarta Players. This is the community of expats, loves to do theater as well. And I joined them at first to do their production mm-hmm. called Godspell. Basically, I tried to audition at that time, but then I was late and everything, and I didn't know where the place was. I came late. And so they asked me, would you interested to be crew? And I said, like, yeah, sign me up. And so I tried as crew first, then becoming assistant producer in that play as well. And then I did several plays after that with Jakarta Players, I guess around 3 years. I did Joseph in Technicolor Dreamcoat. I also acted in it, but also helped with the production. They have this Broadway review, Broadway Kejava. So I acted in it as well. Yeah, and then after that, we have Jakarta Performing Arts, kind of like being formed by the kids that love musical theater, because Jakarta Players has focused more towards about theater play, dramatic play, which is, I love that as well. So Jakarta Performing Arts community was being formed by kids who love musical theater. So they just want to do musical theater only. So that's how it was formed. So yeah. And I gravitated towards Jakarta Performing Arts community as well, because I don't know, the energy in that community, it's just very, very creative. Nothing is weird. You know, sometimes when you get into, you know, when you're around creative people or not creative people, sometimes you feel like, ooh, mm-hmm. am I being weird here? You know, if my idea is being weird, because, you know, I mean, creative ideas could be weird. I mean, it's good if it's weird. In JPEG, I never really have that feeling. It's just like create, you know, don't limit yourself. So I gravitate more towards that aura, that kind of energy that this community has.
From there, though, how did you get into directing? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but directing is a pretty big jump.
Yeah, it is. How did I get into directing? It's just like I mentioned before that I always have this story in my head. And every time that I acted in a production, I love acting, but for some reason, I feel not perfectly suited for it. I also has this, ooh, this story would be better if we develop it like this. You know, I always have this vision in my head. I hate calling it vision, though. It's like, it's just this images in my head. Ooh, maybe we should do this. Oh, maybe we should do that and everything. I said one day, it's just like, you know what? Why don't I just try it? It has always been me with another people's production, right? When you're in another people's production, you're really not free of, you know, translating of what you want in your head. So I thought, hey, you know what? Why don't I build my own? I wrote a proposal to JPEG. And I said, hey, I want to do this. Would you guys let me do this? So I put all a very complete proposal, production budget and everything, and the way that I'm going to rehearse it, the way that I'm going to audition it, the way I'm going to market it and everything. And all of those images in my head, I just poured it right then on that proposal. And JPEG was like, yeah, sure. Go for it. And there you go. West Side Story.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, that's 2017. And for first time director, I was insane doing West Side Story. That's crazy.
I was just going to say that. I was very surprised to hear that West Side Story is your first project.
Yes, it was. I was insane, man. I don't know, it feeds your soul in the most amazing way, I guess.
Often you do kind of need that crazy streak because you don't know how hard it was at the time, right?
Yes.
And that's what gave you the courage to kind of blindly go into it. Probably if you knew how difficult it was, you would have chosen something that's a little bit more simpler.
You're right. I think so.
Benefits of being slightly ignorant.
That's true.
It has its benefits sometimes. But I wanted to unpack a little bit of what you said. You said just now, I don't like calling it vision. Can you explain about that more?
The more that I do this, the more that I direct, the more that I co-produce, I found that so many of us calling it vision, so many of us, it's my vision, it's this and that and this. But at the end of the day, that vision needs to be understood in simple matter, because calling it vision, you put that image or you put that idea into pedestal. That's how I feel about it. You need to break that down so that every other people could also be involved in it and, you know, create that world with you. That's how I see it. Just an idea.
Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, ideas are cheap.
Yes.
The execution, that's yes. Very expensive.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I can feel you on that. So, Juanita, is this what you do for a living?
Mm-mm. I do this voluntarily.
And what's your day job then?
My day job, what I work for a living, I'm managing this fellowship program for The Conversation Indonesia. Yeah.
So if you have a full-time, it is a full-time job, right?
It is.
So yeah. How do you manage your time then between, you know, your day job, quote unquote, and then your theater work?
Basically, whenever I don't work, I do theater. So I do my day job very, very early. Usually I start 7, and then so that I could stop around 5 kind of thing. And then from 5, I just do theater. And weekends, it's for theater. It's hard to explain. And then somebody also asked me, aren't you tired at all? Like, of course. Yeah, of course you're tired. But for me personally, I feel like I can't not to, you know what I mean? It's just naturally inclined that way. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't feel tired when doing theater.
True love. How do you feel when you're directing then?
When I direct, it's I truly feel like I'm building that world. The world that was beautifully created by the writer. And it's such a joy for me when I'm shaping it kind of 3D version. I guess this is what happened as well. When I was in basic school and then junior high school, I don't stop daydreaming, and it has that world and shapes and forms and everything. And I really enjoy doing it. And to have that world being presented for everyone to get, that process, I can never get enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lovely. In your experience so far directing and working in theater scene in Indonesia, what would you say were the main challenges that you faced?
Specifically for directing, it's working with many, many personalities and also egos. When I started at first, it was, I know what I want, and I kind of told everyone, this is what I want. I want you all doing it the way that I want it. But that's not what directing should be. How to present that world with collaboratively with many, many brilliant people. In directing, I learned so much about myself. And I learned that there are many, many brilliant people as well, and talented, that also has a strong personalities and egos, of course. And that is something to navigate. Yeah. And of course, time, yeah. Community-based, volunteer-based production. Time is pretty much, that's the challenge. When you direct, you also become the facilitator of great minds, because the creative people around you are great people. They're very talented people. It's such a waste, I feel, if you just gung-ho with what you want and not listening to what other creative minds around you. I learned about that.
Completely agree with you in that to a certain extent, top-down doesn't work anymore. top-down leadership, top-down management, mm-hmm. Even in a theater company, in a creative project, it just doesn't work anymore. Especially if you're working with a community of volunteers, right? There's no reason why they should really listen to you. They don't work for you. They're doing it just willingly. However, though, would you say there's a difference between ego and creative voice? Would you say to a certain extent there needs to be a little bit of stubbornness in preserving your creative voice?
This is what's unique about directing, basically. You need to really have the vision or image. You need to have a vivid and strong image of what sort of story that you want to tell and everything. When you really know the story of the world that you want to create, it helps you navigating, listening to other creative minds, but also stay true with what you want. But in the process as well, you going to be informed that maybe that world that you had in your head can be bigger, can even be a lot more beautiful than you had imagined it before. But your question of, is it difficult to realize or differentiate egos and creative voice? Not if you know where your world is going to be taken. When you have that really strong core of what the world that you want to create, this creative voices would amplify you. But you will also recognize when these creative voices trying to poke through with their own selfishness, say, for example, you would be able to recognize that as well. And you would say no. And I guess that's, if I could mention, and I guess let's talk about women in theater. Women director, female director, stage director, to be precise, you kind of have to navigate that leadership as well. And I feel sometimes I've found so many restrict women to say what they have in mind. And when they speak up, they're being shamed for it. They're being, you know, being called a name or something, being called difficult and everything, you know, there's label.
Yeah, sexism. Yeah.
But we always have a choice, I feel. I know that I've been called many, many names by people, but that shouldn't be your focus. That should not be the challenge that you want to take, addressing what people call you. I choose not to take on that challenge. I chose to focusing on the world that I'm trying to create, no matter what people say about it. Like, I couldn't care less, you know, but that's a choice. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really strong and honest opinion. I think nothing against people who choose to tackle that social issue.
Yes.
And they're doing really great work, but it is really important to realize that you can choose to take on whatever challenges you want. The key, you don't have to. You can choose anything. That's the essence of empowerment and women empowerment, knowing that if you don't want to do that, you don't have to.
Knowing that you have a choice. You are not a victim.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Taking the locus of control and owning that. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yes.
So, Fonita, I know. Tell our listeners, my listeners of the podcast. Thank you. I love all of you listeners. You know that, right? So can you tell them a little bit about the project that that you're currently directing?
The last 5 years, I am directing and co-producing this musical by Jason Robert Brown. The story tells about ups and downs in a relationship that lasts for 5 years between these two persons, this Kathy and Jamie. The super interesting structure of this, they tell it from their own perspective. Kathy tells the story from the moment they broke up. Jamie, the guy, tells the story from the moment that the love flourished, the beginning of the relationship. And we are going to stream it And this is the first time Jakarta Performing Arts Community is going to do an online streaming due to the pandemic and everything.
To bring it relevant to the current time, everyone in the creative scene all over the world, in theater, in performing arts, are trying to figure out how to do that, how to keep the essence of live stage performing arts, mm-hmm. but to bring that to a digital world, to digitalize it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On one hand, it's a huge task. On the other hand, mm-hmm. I think it presents great opportunity.
Yep. It also opens a lot of creative doors. That's how I see it. Because I see it, okay, when you cannot do one thing, you look for other ways to do it, and then it opens up another creative door for you. And that's very, very interesting about it. Before, I wouldn't even, many people wouldn't even thought of how to, you know, combine all this essence of film and also essence of theater together and then create a hybrid of it. Mm-hmm. But now with being posed a challenge like that, you kind of like, you know, search to your creative minds, and that's beautiful. I think that's a great collaborative opportunity.
Yeah. So ladies and gentlemen, I will be putting the info on my blog about where you can get the tickets. So look out for that. Juanita, to close this great discussion today, from here on out, how do you see the future of theater in Indonesia? And what about women's roles in that landscape?
We need more women for sure. Yes. Theater in Indonesia, as we know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's predominantly male, exclusive. I think the theater in Indonesia needs to open it up and evolve and take in more and more and modern influences. How can we be, you know, in the forefront as well? Because now the theater is just something, if you ask young people about theater in Indonesia, they have such distance about it. I feel like we need to embrace young perspective and make them excited about theater. For women's role in it, dude, we need more women for sure. Currently, theater in Indonesia has only two female theater directors that I know of. It's Jajang Chenur and Faiza Marzuki. Both are brilliant, brilliant women. Faiza adapted Women at a Point Zero. This is a novel by Nawal El Sadawi. And she's also done work with Pramudia Anantatur. She's brilliant. And she's also a female activist. Usually, you know, you can't help being an activist when you want to put forward something. Yes, it's a huge task, but it's not the task that you cannot take on. Because at the end of the day, those tasks are just like the job that you're doing. I mean, the women takes on their life, taking care of the family. That's a huge job, I think. But we can do it. If you can do that, you can direct. I'm telling you. It basically comes down to what do you choose, and choose it confidently.
Yeah. Any closing comments?
Closing comments, watch our production. It's going to be great. It's going to be very, very special. You would want to see this, and you would want to be moved by this as well, as we have been moved by this as well.
And that was her unique story and experience. If you would like to share your voice with me, contact me at irineefrin.com. That's AirineEfferin.com. Subscribe for more courageous voices from women all around Southeast Asia.